in our pledge drives and being key contributors to our success. As a community partner, your organization or business becomes invested in a richer way in KPFT and helps to keep local independent media flowing. Interested in being a community partner? Well, contact us by email at partners@kpft.org. Thanks for your interest in our Community Partners program. This is KPFT Houston.
A Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees signals 8 p.m. Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm your host, Mary Edgerton, along with an ensemble of gifted hosts. Hank Rubicek, our producer and the show's founder, Greg Audell, appearing with Floyd the Wonder Dog, and Warren Holloman, our master of wellness. These guys are not only gifted hosts, they are great storytellers. We also have a wonderful group of guest hosts who grace our show, Harwood Taylor and Chris Gorman, Eric Heen, and Paul Topekian. Truly a wonderful group to spend an evening with. As I mentioned before, we no longer have interns working with us, so we are engineering the shows ourselves. Yes, flying by the seat of our pants. Hang in there. November is a month of traditions. As everybody knows, traditions have been turned on their ear during this pandemic. And speaking of traditions, I have a tradition of inviting Rich Johnston onto the show this time of year. Rich is a writer and teaches in the English and Fine Arts Department at the United States Air Force Academy. He comes to Houston from Colorado Springs to join the Marshall Committee with me to select next year's Marshall Scholars. Never heard of the Marshall Scholars? They are Americans who go to the United Kingdom for graduate studies. We choose the best and the brightest. They are also selected to keep the U.S.-UK special relationship alive and well. I know most people have heard of Rhodes Scholars. Many of our interviewees are candidates for both, although, as we like to say, the Rhodes origins are in blood diamonds, while our scholarship was created by the UK government to honor General Marshall for the Marshall Plan. Enough of that history lesson. Let me get back to traditions. This year, our interviews were held over Zoom, but Rich and I decided that a tradition is a tradition, so we recorded this show over Zoom over the weekend. Our topic is families and holidays, which, as you know, can range from the oh no to the oh yes in memories. And to enhance the tradition, I invited Nadia Hakim to join us. Nadia Hakim works in the Harris County Health System introducing technical innovations in healthcare. She develops graphics tools using virtual reality to get sedentary people to become more active to improve their health. I bet that concept is flourishing right now. Just want to remind everybody, Rich and Nadia were on the show together on November 14th, 2018. So we definitely are keeping a tradition going. So Rich and Nadia, welcome back. I can't wait to hear these stories and share them with our radio audience. So Rich, tell us something about tradition and families, love them or leave them.
When I think about tradition and family, Mary, and the holidays, For me, there's really only one story, and it's a story of my uncle Koopa. It's spelled Cooper, but pronounced Koopa in the Deep South. And I think he was my grandfather's brother, so my great uncle. I didn't know him that well, but he would show up every Thanksgiving, and he was a real curiosity in the family because he only had one leg and six fingers. There were all kinds of theories that were floating around about what had happened to him and how he'd lost his leg and how he'd lost his fingers. But he only had one leg, and the only finger on his left hand was the middle finger. So he was quite a sight to behold, driving around town, waving to people out of the front seat of his truck, you know, flipping everyone off. But anyway, Uncle Cooper would arrive at Thanksgiving, and, you know, at some point he would settle down in one of the green leather chairs next to the fireplace across from my grandfather. And, you know, after a couple of bourbon and scotches, bourbon and waters, the grandchildren would work up the courage to kind of gather around him and ask him to take off his leg. And he would take off his leg with great ceremony. And I'll never forget Uncle Cooper kind of rolling up his trousers, and then you start seeing these argyle socks, and then there's this just moment of total pure disconnect where you see the contrast between his argyle socks and this pink plastic, like pink Barbie doll plastic that made up his leg, and then the leather straps, and you know, if you were lucky, you would be the one who would get to unbuckle his leg that year. And we would have great fun with it. We would, you know, throw it to one another. We would take it out back, and, you know, play croquet with it. You know, it would fight to see who got to play croquet with it. Or we run around and, you know, show it to my grandmother and frighten her. But the beautiful thing was, you know, the funny thing was, and this goes back to the tradition theme, that every year there would come a point in the evening when Uncle Cooper would forget that he had taken off his leg, and he would stand up to fix himself another scotch or something like that, and he would fall face forward, like, you know, onto the rug right in front of the fireplace. And that was basically the signal for dinner time in my family. When Uncle Cooper hit the floor, everyone came in and it was time for dinner.
Rich, that's great. I mean, that's a little different from banging the bell, isn't it?
Something like that.
Now, we just heard how Uncle Koopa started.
It's Koopa. Koopa.
Koopa. Okay.
Very good.
I'm not from the Deep South. Uncle Koopa signaled that it was ready for dinner. So tell us about a dinner table with you and your grandparents.
So my father's from Iran, and Iranians always look for a reason to get together. And it's funny because when I explain to my wife, you know, like why we're getting together, I'm like, oh yeah, it's the winter solstice and we get together and we have food and, you know, there's fresh fruit from the season and we tell stories and have tea. And she's always like, this is what you always do, no matter what the occasion is. This is just what Iranians always do. They just like get together and this is what they do. It could be winter solstice or Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever it may be. This is just how y'all operate. So yeah, like my family's from Iran and they're Muslim. So, you know, the Thanksgiving and Christmas, they don't really mean the same thing to us. But it's another reason to come together. And we have, like I said, we have tea, we tell stories. My grandfather, who we called Baba Jun, he was our master storyteller and joke teller. Only thing was he was he was never in a rush about anything, like whether it was getting ready for something or like even when it came to telling his stories. It was very slow-paced and just like, oh, Baba June started telling a joke. Everyone cancel their plans for the rest of the day sort of thing. So another thing that Baba June was, he was a very peculiar man, and like, oh, he was just so wonderful. But like I said, peculiar. And one of the things to like add to the tradition bit with Baba June was that he learned English from watching American TV. Like, he taught himself English and he studied. And one of his favorite shows to watch was Jerry Springer, right? So that was like a whole nother thing. And then if you want to go visit my grandparents, the TV stations, it was either Jerry Springer or like America's Funniest Videos, no in between. But for some reason, like Thanksgiving or Christmas, he would always have it set to like National Geographic or the Discovery Channel, either of those things. I remember distinctly, like every time we got together, you know, around these times, these channels would be highlighting a tribe, like some like far off isolated tribe, and the women would be, you know, topless. So they would be in their traditional garb, their bodies would be painted, but like for the most part, they would have their bare breasts out. And this is what and the kids' table, right? That was what was in front of the TV. And then Baba June would sit in his chair and watch this show. And we would all, my cousins and I would have to watch this show with him. And like, we're like, why can't we watch football like normal families? But no, we were looking at these tribal breasts as, you know, we're eating our food, and it's fine. But like, now that I'm thinking about being at the children's table, like even as adults, we still sit at the children's table. Like, you don't get to go sit at the adult table unless something like terrible happens, right? And you get, I don't want to say it's a promotion, but that's like a really terrible way to look at it, right?
Well, it is sort of like a promotion. I mean, we have the same system in my family. I mean, they're at Thanksgiving, you know, my grandmother, there was like a set number of tables that she squeezed together, lined up, and there was a set number of places, and I think there are like 26 of them. And, you know, unless someone died, you just stayed at the children's table until, right? You were promoted. And in fact, I remember that there was this year when I had like two great aunts or something like that who passed like in rapid succession before my 13th birthday. And so I got promoted around the same time as my, you know, 19-year-old cousin, which made him mad, right? Because he'd been sitting at the, you know, the children's table, you know, barely able to fit under it for 19 years. Meanwhile, like you could see at the children's table, you know, my sisters who were just a little bit younger than me, kind of looking around, like looking, looking. You know, who's the next relative who's going to go, and not really being able to identify anyone. There wasn't anyone, right? So, but yeah, no, the children's table, that brings back awful memories.
That's funny. So, well, speaking of your sisters, Rich, I think you told me about bickering with your sisters. God knows what it started with. Maybe they were mad at you about this promotion on a skiing trip with the family.
Yeah, this wasn't a Thanksgiving. This isn't a Thanksgiving story. It's more of a Christmas story. I grew up in a half Presbyterian, half Lutheran household. And I think when we were, I guess when I was 14 or 15, we took our first Christmas trip. And it was a skiing trip, and you know, my family didn't have a lot of money. We didn't go out to Colorado where I live now. We went to Snowshoe, West Virginia, and like on every family trip, my sisters and I were just bickering with each other. I think that the fight in question that precipitated the crisis that I'm about to describe, it kind of stemmed from, you know, my sisters wanting to stay on the green slope, you know, the beginner slopes, and me wanting to venture up to the blues and maybe the black diamonds. But my mother and father wanting everyone to like be together and ski together, which was just boring. And, you know, it was just bickering. But I think that in the background, there were some things going on between my parents that my sisters and I weren't really aware of at the time. But I just remember one moment it was Christmas Eve dinner. We had gone to this really nice restaurant on the resort. In fact, I remember the name of it. It was called the Red Fox or something like that. I remember this distinctly because it was the fanciest restaurant I'd ever been to. They served this little bowl, which I presumed was like a iced tea or something like that, but turned out to be a finger cleanser. And I drank it and spit it out all over the table. But, we were bickering and my mother just sort of like hauled me out of the restaurant into the lobby and told me that I had ruined Christmas. And to a child growing up in a Christian household, and for a child like me with an over-eager imagination, that charge of having quote unquote ruined Christmas was cosmic. I mean, to ruin Christmas, I mean, that's an automatic trip to hell. It would be like, my mother had accused me of actually reaching up into the heavens and slapping, the infant Christ. And what happens to people who ruin Christmas? I didn't even want to think about that, but I dreamt about it for days and days and days. It triggered nightmares. I'm sure my mother didn't mean it at the time, but if you have a child with an imagination, like, don't ever tell them that they ruined a holiday, because that's not going to end up well for anyone.
That is terrible. My mother, also from the South, had a way of being rather dramatic at Christmas time. And so I have to tell you about the time that we got together. And let me see, I had actually been in England on the Marshall Scholarship and had come back to the United States, and I hadn't seen my sister since I left for England. My sister had married, and my father had been against the wedding, and so he refused to see her. And this then made it very difficult to gather together during the holidays, because who was going to be there, him or Jane? I mean, it made everything different. So we decided that we would gather in our hometown, Rio Grande City. Jane would come with her husband, Jerry. My father would go to Austin, a five-hour drive away, and stay with his sister. And when we were all finished down there, I would go up and see him in Austin. And he did call me and grumble that he wasn't going to get to visit with me as long. And I said, I didn't create this problem. You did. So that's just what it is. So we have our Christmas table, and we have our turkey and our dressing. And my mother always made these traditional dishes. There would be yum yum salad. And there would also be this one that nobody liked, which was a cranberry gelatin salad. I mean, in the 1950s, they were so crazy about gelatin and aspic and so on. But it was a beautiful table. And we're there, and I had actually invited a friend to come with me because my family I found just a little too much sometimes to be with. And I said, you've got to come with me. So my friend Peter is there with me. And I started to say, well, tomorrow or day after tomorrow, Peter flies back to California. And then the day after that, we drive up to Austin, and Jane and Jerry, you'll leave me off there. And my sister, whom I've described before as in a children's dictionary, the picture of a Nazi camp commander, it would be her picture there. And so she suddenly explodes, and she says, nobody changes plans on me. You said you were going to go tomorrow, not day after tomorrow. I don't let anybody change plans on me. I don't let my husband do that. I don't let my any so-and-so do that, and I'm certainly not going to let my sister do that. And this was the first time I heard that the plans had been changed. It turns out that my mother, thinking that she was going to be the peacemaker, had gone to my sister and said, listen, things have changed. Your father's upset that he's not going to see Mary enough, so you're going to have to take her up a day earlier. Of course, no one had told me. And so my sister explodes, and then I'm like, I didn't even do anything, and suddenly I'm this criminal here. You know, I'm being taken to the gas chambers, and I'm upset. And my mother, as we're all fighting, says, oh, I feel like the mother scorpion who's laid her baby's eggs, and they hatch and crawl on her back and eat her alive. That was when I went upstairs. So my brother is trying to be the mediator, and he's coming up to me saying, well, what happened? When were you supposed to go back? And then he goes back down and talks to my sister, and then he comes back up, and finally, it goes back to my original plan. My sister doesn't apologize to me, of course, but I'll never forget my brother saying to me, okay, you know, Jane's agreed and so on. And so everything's going to be okay if you come down. And, you know, I don't know why Mom had to say that. But that was my mother. That was our family. And I've told my family this year, when you come for Thanksgiving, leave the Schitt's Creek scripts at home, okay? We're just going to get along, okay?
Solid ask. Oh, that's a solid ask. Yeah.
So
holidays can be so brutal. I mean, just the tensions that they bring out in everyone. I mean, on the one hand, it's family. Like you said, you don't pick them out at a grocery store. They are who they are. But, oh, man, sometimes you still wish you could return some of them.
You know, last year for Thanksgiving, because I'm the middle wife, you know, my ex-husband has a first wife, and then I'm the middle wife, and now he has a third wife. Well, as the middle wife, I didn't get invited to the family Thanksgiving. So, you know,
snap.
I went to Costa Rica. I said, I've always wanted to see the birds, the rainforest. I had an absolutely wonderful time. And shortly after that, of course, travel was closed. So kind of worked in my favor. I'm thinking of doing things like that again.
Mm-hmm. I remember traveling. That was nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to break now for station identification. We are here on So What's Your Story? Broadcast almost live every Thursday at 8 p.m. on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, or live streaming from kpft.org. We look forward to our weekly show and the opportunity to be an important part of the Houston storytelling scene. First, let me put on my social media hat and say something about that. If you don't have a radio, it's no excuse for missing the show. We are broadcast from the website kpft.org over the internet all day, every day, so it is easy enough to catch the show on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. You can also visit our Facebook page during the week preceding the show and get an idea about what we are up to. You just never know. And here in Houston, time and stories are not stopped by a pandemic, so let's review what is happening in our storytelling community. Our show sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, will hold a virtual storytelling swap in their Zoom meeting room on Tuesday, November 24. Yes, the show must go on. The Zoom meeting room ID and password are posted in the events calendar at the website HoustonStorytellers.org. No spaces, and it ends with an S at the end of tellers, HoustonStorytellers.org. Also, on their website are the archived podcasts of our past shows, so check those out. Play them at random or choose a favorite. The Moth in Houston is another great storytelling event. They went virtual over the summer, but I just looked at a notice on their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston, stating that all local virtual shows are canceled through 2021 until further notice. That is sad to hear, but they do have national and international virtual story swaps. So check themoth.org for news on how to enter those. And by the way, they do sell out. In other news, Houston's annual Telebration event
will miss the Black Lab restaurant and pub, which is now closed. But they have been able to arrange for the 2020 Telebration to be held at Rudyard's Pub. This year, Telebration will be held on Saturday, November 21st. The exact time will be announced. Rudyard's Pub is at 2010 Waugh Drive in Houston. It's a terrific venue. You can also buy food and beverages there and enjoy them during the show. And what is Telebration? Well, it's an event where storytelling enthusiasts all around the globe will share their storytelling talents in concerts held locally to celebrate the art of storytelling. In Houston, Telebration brings together some of our most celebrated storytellers to delight, captivate, and mesmerize audiences with their stories. It creates a network of storytelling enthusiasts bonded together in spirit at the same time and on the same weekend. Okay. Everybody who wants to go, please follow up at HoustonStorytellers.org for the exact time. And remember, wear your mask, take hand sanitizer, and socially distance. Be careful out there. COVID is not a hoax. It is very real and very deadly. Fortunately, the work on vaccines has progressed well, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. And finally, even as we socially distance, there's nothing like curling up at home on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. and tuning into KPFT 90.1 FM. Next Thursday at 8 p.m., the hosts up on the roster are Greg Audell and Floyd the Wonder Dog. And I love Floyd. He's the best. Okay, everybody out there, 2020 will give way to 2021, and we will have many new beginnings. Before we do start with some more stories from my guests, I just want to tell everybody that there was, in the end, a happy ending to my split family and another Thanksgiving, and that's another story. I'll save it for next year. But just as a preview, we all got together again, and till my parents died, we were all able to meet all the children, all the spouses, all the grandchildren. Now, let's start back some stories. Nadia.
Yes, ma'am.
Curious. We've been talking about great holidays. We've been talking about food or food tables where things happen. But there's a piece that we haven't talked about yet. Gifts.
Oh, yeah.
Story about a gift.
Oh, Lord.
I know. Let me go back in this file cabinet. Yeah, gifts. I honestly don't remember if this was a holiday gift or what. I do remember there was a year that Furbies came out, right? Do y'all remember these? These were like little gremlin sort of things. They were small, like mechanical. They blinked and they like said, like they had babble, like they just babbled. I don't think it was like any real words or anything like that.
They had disturbingly large eyes.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly them. And so my sister is 3 years younger than me. And then we grew up next door to my uncle, aunt, and my cousin, and my cousin is 4 years younger than me. So them being so close in age, if one got something, the other one like had to have it, right? Like it was very much, even if I had something, they were like, oh, we want that too. We want that too. It was a whole thing. So the year that Furbies were like really all the rage, they both like, they were begging for it. Just, oh, we want Furbies. We want Furbies, you know, this, this, and this. And you know, it finally came around, and I remember like to get the gifts, they had this little scavenger hunt, and then lo and behold, they each got Furbies. And they, of course, like with any toy that you ask for, like for weeks and weeks and weeks, they get tired of it after a couple of days, right? So, you know, after feeding it, you know, the first like few days, and it would like cry and this, this, and this, there was a deep sleep mode you could put it in where like if you jostled it, it wouldn't wake up. You would have to like physically like turn it completely upside down and like shake it to wake it from this slumber. And that's how you would reactivate it. But I remember I had mastered this and they were begging me like, can you just please put it in deep sleep? Can you like, oh, just please, like, if you could just put it in deep sleep. And I put it in deep sleep and they just kind of tucked it away. And in the corner of a closet somewhere. And yeah, Furbies.
Furbies. I do remember Furbies because I do remember that deep sleep mode, but we had a Furby who went rogue. When we recently got him, you could switch a switch and he would either speak in Spanish or in English. Then he would actually say things, but it got to a point where you would shake him and shake him. He wouldn't do anything. So just stuck him back with all the toys. But about 2 o'clock in the morning, our rogue Furby could be heard saying, "Tengo hambre." "I'm hungry." And there was nothing that could put him into a deep sleep. I mean, he was totally rogue.
That's fantastic. And a wonderful preview of next year's Halloween episode, Mary. No, you know, it's interesting that the kind of competitiveness that the culture of, you know, asking for these holiday presents brings out. I remember there was one year, my best friend who lived down the street from me, my best friend and I, we both asked for a chemistry set for Christmas. I think we were probably 11, 12 years old. And we both got one. But there was a big difference between them. My chemistry set came in something about the size of a shoebox. It had, oh, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 test tubes in it, a test tube holder, an alcohol lamp, and about 4 bottles of chemicals. And, you know, if you shook them and mixed them, you could make different colors and things like that, but that was about it. Bert, on the other hand, got this, you know, chest with a proper lab bench and a Bunsen burner attached to a propane tank and Earl and Meyer flasks and distilling equipment and all this stuff. And, you know, he could grow crystals, he could make explosions, and I didn't understand. Like, I asked my parents, like, why did I get this? And Bert got all of that. My parents said it had something to do with the size of our chimneys and what Santa could fit down. But I by that point, I knew that wasn't true. And, well, it's essentially how I learned about socioeconomic inequality. You know, we both asked for this thing, and, you know, there was my, you know, pitiful little chemistry set on the one hand, and Bert's, you know, Frankenstein laboratory basement to contend with. Lessons one learns at the holidays.
Yes.
Probably not the craziest present I've ever asked for, though.
I wore a poodle one year, and my mother gave me cards, playing cards with a poodle on them. I was so disappointed. Oh, no. She thought she had done something wonderful since there was no way we could get a dog.
There's like a whole subgenre of stories of, like, you know, those things that your relatives give you that you don't actually want, and then you have to come up clever ways of writing thank you notes for them.
Right. Yep. Thank you notes, please, please. But so, Rich, have you ever asked for something that your parents just came down and said absolutely no way?
Yes, actually, I can think of one example. I'll set this up by saying that I was always asking for odd presents. I never wanted bicycles and skateboards. I was always getting obsessed with things. I remember one year, for example, I wanted a cuckoo clock. I became obsessed with cuckoo clocks and clock making. But I do remember, and I think I must have been 9 or 10 years old, my mother asked me what I wanted for Christmas. And I said, "I really want a vibrating bed." And her eyes just sort of popped. And she said, "What do you say? What did you say?" And I said, I want a vibrating bed. I want a bed that goes brrr." And my mother said, what, Mary, Nadia, do you remember these things that you would find in cheap motels, like in the 1980s? Do you remember these machines?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I came in the latter part of the 80s, but I mean, I still remember them. Yeah.
you put your quarter into this thing on the side of the bed that looked like a small jukebox, and it would make the whole bed rock mm-hmm. and vibrate. And, you know, essentially what happened was I kind of unintentionally outed my father for a parental lapse. As a reward for getting good grades in elementary school, if I got, you know, all A's and B's on my report card, my father would take me to Atlanta to see a baseball game during the summer. And I think that one year he and one of my uncles took me and a cousin to Atlanta to watch a game. We stayed there overnight in this cheap motel near the stadium. And my dad and my uncle, you know, went out to, you know, get a late dinner, which I think they probably went to a strip club or something like that. But we had this, you know, these two double beds in the motel room with the, you know, that were vibrating. And well, I think my father must have gone to a change machine and changed a $10 bill and just left us all these quarters. But my cousin and I, you know, we just had a grand old time. You know, we turned the TV on, you know, we turned on, I think it had HBO, so we got the good stuff, you know, like 11 o'clock at night. And the bed, I mean, it was just like rocking back and forth. And I mean, for me, it was like having a carnival ride in your own bedroom. And I mean, that was what I wanted for Christmas. Ironically, I think in asking for it, I probably ruined that particular Christmas, because of course it quickly came out how I knew about vibrating beds, but, that's a memory.
I think you probably did ruin that Christmas.
Ruined Christmas yet once again, didn't you, Rich?
Karma. It works like that.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons Thanksgiving was always my favorite holiday, because there were no gifts, except that then my two daughters were born on the 29th and 30th of November. No, we are not a family of habits. It's early. And so now, you know, Thanksgiving, I have to think about gifts, and I have to balance them across the two of them. But just speaking of these holidays, and, you know, as time has gone, we've gone from having Christmas decorations up at Halloween, you know, when they came up at Thanksgiving, it just seemed criminal. Now they're up at Halloween. It's just how these things have moved over the years. So, Nadia, what's been your experience with that?
Oh, man, well, so family get-togethers for the holidays, like, it's always been all over the board for me. Like I mentioned in my previous story, my father is from Iran. He's the youngest out of four. And then my mother is Filipino, and she's the oldest out of five and comes from a very Catholic family. Whatever's happening, wherever we are, there's guaranteed to be a lot of rice involved and most likely a karaoke machine. We most definitely fulfill that stereotype. And I remember as a kid, like, I remember family gatherings for the holidays being something I really looked forward to, with all like the mountains of presents and the food and all the family and cousins being there. And my grandma would always, she still does this. She always sings Besame Mucho, but completely off key. And I remember my uncle, he went through a stage where he was really into the band Lifehouse, and he would just sing that one hit song that they had. But yeah, I started working at the Houston Galleria, which is a really big popular mall here in Houston. And I started working there when I graduated from high school to get through college. And gosh, I was there for about 5-6 years. And like 4 or 5 of those years, I was at a really upscale store where I made a solid commission check. And, this was a little bit before the recession in 2008. But, yeah, working in retail starting at the end of October, like, this is where everything you have ever loved about the holidays just goes to die. Like, they start playing Christmas music from like the week of Halloween to the last week in January so that people stay in the holiday shopping mindset and still want to spend money. And I have only recently started being able to listen to Christmas music again without diving to change the channel. However, I still cannot listen to the Jackson 5's version of Frosty the Snowman, like, God rest his soul, but just the mere thought of little Michael hitting that final line and note, just, like, it makes my skin crawl. So, like, yeah, so, and also, like, the holiday shoppers, they're either really great or they're just really awful, like, very, very few in between. And then the couple of weeks following the holidays, people would be back in the store for returns or exchanges, and that's, like, a whole other beast. Like, can you believe my aunt even, like, would even think of getting me such a hideous color? Like, why does she even bother? Like, this is, and of course, like, replace aunt with any other family member or friend, and this is the griping, the chorus of griping that you hear for those few weeks. And this is after I've helped this family member or friend stand there for at least 15 minutes trying to figure out this person's size or, like, the color that really matched their personality or brought out their eyes, you know? So, like, outside of the Galleria during the holidays, though, I now refer to the Galleria as the third ring of hell. Like, outside of the third ring of hell was, like, the other layer of hell, which was that I started noticing changes at family gatherings. Like, you couldn't talk about politics or other things in front of certain family members. And there was always that aunt or uncle who would make a really awful comment about people of color or the LGBTQ community, or, and you just start wondering, like, have they always been this way? And I just never noticed it. Is it because, like, I recently came out as gay to my cousins and friends, and, like, I'm just, like, more aware of these things now because I belong to this community? Like, just, like, but in Filipino culture and Iranian culture, you don't say anything to the generations before you. Like, that's not a thing. You don't call them out on things. You just let it slide and be polite and, like, talk about it with your cousins, like, about how awful it was. But you would never say it in front of the person who made the comment. So, like, this combination of seeing this really awful side of the holidays through capitalism, right? And then combine that with these, like, really heartbreaking observations you start, like, noticing about your family and these get-togethers, like, I just started making it a point at not to be in town during these holidays. Like, I remember one year I was living in Guatemala during Thanksgiving, and for one Christmas I was visiting a friend in Pakistan and photographing weddings. I was in Mexico City another year for New Year's. Like, I would see my parents and close uncles and aunts and cousins and my sister, who I really, really cared about, like, the people I really mattered and could be my true authentic self around. I would see them outside the holidays all the time. So this was never a big deal for me to, like, actually be here for Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year's or anything like that. So, but things started to change, like, once I started dating my wife. Like, she is very introverted and mindful about her energy and who she's willing to spend it on. And she doesn't waste time trying to do the polite dance or maneuver around inappropriate comments or, you know, just smile and nod through anything. Like, when we were about to get married and going through, like, the guest list, it was, why are we inviting this Iranian aunt who dislikes Filipino people? Half of your family is a Filipino. Why are we even entertaining the thought of inviting this aunt and uncle who openly say terrible things about Black people? Do they know I'm Black? like my wife is Afro-Latina, you know? So, like, getting into this mindset, and, you know, it's just kind of opened the floodgates for these family gatherings. And it doesn't seem like it really bothers, you know, my cousins, my sister, my mom, you know, certain relatives, like my close relatives. They don't seem to mind it too much, you know, and the holidays are, like, now something that we all really look forward to now because we can be our authentic selves. We don't have to worry about someone saying something awful. Like, my sister lives in Atlanta now, and my favorite cousins are in Austin and Dallas, and like, there aren't these mountain of gifts anymore, but like, being able to see them and spend time with them, like, as corny and cheesy as this sounds, like, that really is the greatest gift. And we don't have to worry about spending our energy around all the unnecessary BS, right? So just because the gatherings are smaller, like, we focus on what really matters, right? And that's each other. And but no matter what, there's still mountains of rice and food. So
I love it. Oh, that's wonderful. So you own your holidays now, you know?
Yeah. We've got Shannon's dad and stepmom who live in Warren, Texas. Her mom lives in Dallas, and my parents are here in Houston, but we make time for everyone. It really works out, and it's such a good feeling. Like, I really look forward to it.
That's wonderful. You know, it's particularly difficult now during the pandemic, but it is a nice feeling when you're growing up and you don't own the holidays. You ruin the holidays or they ruin the holidays for you. And then finally you get to own your holiday and say, hey, this is what I want to happen so that we can just be a fun family, loving get together. So that's a wonderful story that brings us back to, what are these holidays for, aside from carrying on an equinox of some kind and celebrating various different religions that one after another have adopted the winter solstice? We now use them to remind ourselves of how much we love our friends and families. So I hope everybody out there will be able to do something, even if it's on Zoom, even if it's by telephone, even if it's a card, just to reach out to the ones you love and say, stay well, stay safe. Okay, thank you guys. Thanks so much for taking out your time on a Sunday night to do this.
Oh, of course.
That was fun.
Well, now we've had a chance to learn about those oh no and oh yes moments, traditions, families. Yes. And I have had a blended family, so our traditions have been a little different. I found a wonderful poem on the net about a blended family, about traditions, and about how you have to pivot with the times. And since we're pivoting with the current times, I thought I'd read it to you. I love traditions. What we learned long ago with our blended family, we need to look at our traditions with more objectivity. With so many relatives to be considered and only so much time in any holiday, we decided to uphold tradition, but in non-traditional ways. Even Shakespeare, I believe, would have found a way to spin it. He'd say, though this be madness, yet there is a method in it. For instance, Christmas at our house has a tradition our children first conceived. We eat pizza and often presents, not on Christmas, but Christmas Eve. Then we'd put Christmas music on the car radio and look at lights along the way as we drove to their other parents' houses where they'd wake up on Christmas Day. Even now, with our children grown, Christmas Eve we still hold dear, as this is now the tradition we look forward to each year. Shakespeare, never a playwright who was afraid of twists or change, might agree by saying this is different, but it is also wondrous strange. Take Thanksgiving, though we celebrate it as it once was celebrated, we may not always celebrate on the day that's designated. This year, our Thanksgiving had all the traditions as it did in times of yore. Only our dinner with all the trimmings occurred the Saturday before. While for most of you, Thanksgiving was still 5 days away, we celebrated yesterday with our traditional buffet. Brian was the only person missing, but we have a computer with webcam, and all our phones and devices have Facebook, text, and Instagram.
It's a simple fact that all parents in every family have found as children grow up, it gets more difficult to gather them around. So we'll give thanks on any day and change dates quite cheerfully in order to be surrounded by our friends and family. For nothing makes us happier, beguiles, or enthralls than the sound of family laughter as it echoes off the walls. We parents know as families change and our children become grown, it's up to us to establish new traditions of our own. Yes, if Shakespeare was alive today, I'm sure that he would tweet, "That which we call Thanksgiving on any other day would taste as sweet." That poem really resonated with me for a lot of reasons. As I alluded to earlier in the show, my family, that is my two daughters and one of my stepsons and his new husband, had planned to all meet in Colorado. In fact, we were going to meet at the Stanley Hotel, which is where The Shining was filmed. And we were excited about this, ghost tours, cooking together, being together. But we made those plans back in October. Actually, they started last summer in August, when the pandemic was a little better controlled. In the last several weeks, we realized that it's out of control. There's about a 10% infection rate across the country, and we felt it would be selfish if we felt that we could do this, considering that we could catch a disease while traveling and spread it to other people who might be vulnerable. And there are vulnerable people in the family. And after a lot of discussion and some hand-wringing and some what should I listen to, my heart or my head, we decided that in view of the fact that the vaccine is around the corner, that we won't see each other this Thanksgiving. And I'm sad about that, but I know that we're doing the right thing and that together our world is going to survive. The vaccine will come out. Maybe 2021 we'll be planning that Christmas, that Thanksgiving again, and then a Christmas. And me, for one, I can't wait, because it's really going to be wonderful. So the poem, like I say, meant a lot to me. And here's what I know. So I know that this next Thursday, I will be comforting myself with stories during the 8 p.m. show. And don't turn that dial, because after us comes the very cool Lars and the Tennyson Tapes right here on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary E., and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. Oh, and Nadia, how could I not choose this for our closing music?
And back to the third ring of hell.
No man is a fairy tale, they say. KPFT is seeking programming of all kinds for our new streaming channel. From music to talk, we want it all. Whether you're a seasoned veteran or a novice, we'd love to hear your big idea. If you're a local podcaster or know one, here's a chance to move from digital to FM. KPFT's web streaming channel replicates on our FM channel, so your idea needs to adhere to language and other policies mandated by the FCC. These projects also need to be non-commercial in nature. Interested? Just visit kpft.org and click on the Propose a Show tab towards the bottom of our front page. Multilingual programming is also welcome. Again, just visit kpft.org for details. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you for a foreign phrase in seven letters commonly used in English. The first four letters are a large U.S. company, and the last four letters are also a large U.S. company. Well, the answer is vis-a-vis, which gives you Visa and Avis. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon.
Elle me demandit à boire, je l'ai menée auprès d'une fontaine. C'est l'aviron qui nous mène, qui nous mène.
Sticking with the foreign theme, I'm looking for two foreign words for the. Put them together and you have an English noun used for some people. If you add an S, there's a second distinct solution. So put together two foreign words for the, and you have an English noun for some people. Put together two different foreign words for the, add an S, and you have a different English noun used for some people. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org, and I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Can it be now?
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of November 16th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
In your car looking for news coverage or some new music. Maybe you're at home flipping the dial looking for something different. Your radio may have settled on KPFT and stayed there. If you're new to this station, here's how community radio works. We rely on listeners, not advertisers, for the money that we use to operate our station. We hold membership drives a few times a year, and we ask for you to support our work with a pledge. If you give a call to 713-526-4000 and ask for the membership department, you can pledge an amount of your choice to support KPFT. You've come to rely on us, but we rely on you. That's 713-526-4000. Ask for the membership department and support KPFT, or go to kpft.org to pledge. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Human trafficking is modern-day slavery, and it happens in our own communities. Victims can be any gender, age, or race. Join the Department of Homeland Security's Blue Campaign to learn how to recognize and report this heinous crime. Visit our website at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. That's